back to HealthLink on Air, produced each week by Upstate Medical University and University Hospital. Linda Cohen along with you. Well, between 200,000 and 300,000 hip replacement operations are performed in the United States each year, and most of them in patients over the age of 60. But there's been a recent surge in complaints made to the FDA in the past year about the failure of some of these prosthetic devices, leading Johnson & Johnson, a major manufacturer, to recall one of their most problematic devices, the articular surface replacement, or the ASR. It's an all-metal device. Now, it's estimated that over 500,000 patients now have that device in place, and experts are scrambling to evaluate the health dangers associated with these artificial hips. Well, joining me this morning to shed some light on this situation is Dr. Robert Sherman, an assistant professor of orthopedic surgery at Upstate Medical University, specializing in minimally invasive hip and knee replacements, revision joint replacements, and the management of fractures and injuries around joint replacements. Welcome, Dr. Sherman. Thanks for coming in today.
Thank you so much for having me this morning.
Well, first help us understand, like, who are the people getting hip replacements today?
There's a wide variety of people that get hip replacements, from really young people that have suffered a big trauma to their hip and broken their pelvis or broken their hip bone, to older people, people in their 80s and 90s that have just had wear and tear over many decades of use in their hip. Historically, older people had hip replacements, people in their late 70s and early 80s. But as we as the technology gets better and better, younger and younger people are having hip replacements. The group of people that want to have hip replacements, that need hip replacements, are people that have hip pain and loss of the joint surface in their hip and wear and tear in their hip.
I think from what I was reading, that it used to be, first of all, obviously more people were over 60, and now you have people in their 50s, 40s, as you said, and in special circumstances, much younger. But everybody, it seems to me, even in the older range, want a more active life. So before, I think, wasn't it true that I guess people were more tolerant?
Exactly. Years ago, surgeons would tell patients that had hip pain and hip problems, you're too young to have a hip replacement. We've really changed our outlook at treatment of patients. We want people to have an active, healthy lifestyle and be able to enjoy the things they want to do. Part of this is because the technology has gotten better and hip replacements last longer and allow people to do more activities that years ago they wouldn't allow them to do that. The other thing is we've just looked at the entire way we look at patients with hip problems a little differently. And if we can give someone a much more active, pain-free lifestyle when they're 50, and when they're 80 may not have many options for them, most patients would rather that. If I have to tell somebody they need to use a walker, if they're 85, people can deal with it. If they're 55, people don't want that. They want some option to give them their lifestyle back, the lifestyle that they're used to having.
And you also mentioned that now they last longer generally.
Exactly.
So what's all this flack? What just happened? I mean, it sounds like something, you know, just exploded in this whole world, where before there was the feeling that we're making greater and greater progress, the hip replacement prostheses are lasting longer. What happened?
Well, as we develop more and more newer technologies and revisit actually some technologies that are older and try to make them better, we came up with a new idea, and that was using a metal-on-metal hip replacement. When we look at hip replacements, there's several different substances that we can make the hips out of. For the most part, what a hip replacement actually is a metal cup that goes into the pelvis and then a metal stem that goes into your thigh bone with a ball on the metal stem and then a liner into the cup we put in the pelvis. Now, what we make the liner and the head out of can be different substances. And that can be made out of a plastic, it can be made out of a metal, or it can be made out of a ceramic. And there's advantages and disadvantages for each type of bearing surface. That's what we call the lining between the ball and the socket there. So years ago, it was always a metal ball and a plastic liner. The plastic liners have gotten better, and actually over the last 10 years have gotten a lot better, and we can talk about that in a little bit. But we've also tried what we call ceramic on ceramic, which is a ceramic ball and a ceramic liner. These are a lot more expensive, and the one side drawback of that is sometimes they have a squeaking noise to them, and that can be really discouraging for somebody that makes this squeaking noise. It's very rare, but when it does happen, patients complain of it a lot. The other option is to have a ceramic on a plastic or a metal on a metal liner. And that's where we've ran into all these problems that we hear about in the news right now. This is this metal on metal design.
So what was wrong with it? What's gone wrong with it?
Well, what happens is when the metal ball rubs on the metal liner, little metal ions escape into the tissues. we didn't really think in the lab when we did the initial studies on this was going to be a problem. And when these designs first came out, people were really enthusiastic that this was a really great option. It allowed for a bigger head than we were used to using a plastic liner, which meant you could do a lot more activities, and it also had a lot less wear to it. So we thought they'd last longer, feel better, and much more realistic like a normal hip. Unfortunately, what we see in the lab doesn't always happen in people. And over the about 5 or 10 years that these were put in, we started to see that more and more people were having problems. Normally, about 95 to 97% of people, at least short-term, do well with a hip replacement. And that's a pretty good statistic. Unfortunately, with these numbers, even at 2, 3, 4 years after surgery, we were seeing 15 to 20% of people with problems, which is much higher than we would anticipate.
What kind of problems were they complaining of? What led to all of this?
Several different problems. One of the problems were things like hip pain, almost a mass that you could feel in your hip area, swelling, and even horrible complications like dislocation or that the pieces were getting loose. When we went back and got x-rays on it, we noticed that the metal pieces we put into the bone were loose and were moving positions. Then other people complained of other vague complaints, kidney problems, liver problems, rashes, and we found that there was a variety of different problems that were going on. One of the problems was that the metal ions were being absorbed by different places in the body. They accumulated in the liver, they accumulated in the kidneys. Now, we knew that could happen for lots of time. We just didn't think it was a big deal, and we didn't think that enough metal would collect that it would be a problem. For many years, we've recommended not using these devices in women that are childbearing age, because we know it can cross the placenta, and we were worried that would be a problem. We knew not to use it in people that had kidney disease because we were worried that it would accumulate in the kidney, and especially people that maybe only have one kidney or already have a kidney problem. What we didn't realize is that it was also going to collect in the tissue around their hip. And people were developing something we call a pseudotumor. And what a pseudotumor is, it's a term that we came up with to describe something that almost looks like a tumor or a mass or a soft tissue collection around their hip. And the body was absorbing these little ions of metal, and through a series of reactions was just building up a lot of scar tissue and inflammatory tissue in the hip. This led to, one, the cup in the stem getting loose, and two, these big collections of tissue in the hip that were uncomfortable and caused a lot of problems with patients.
So it sounds to me like right now, with over 500,000 patients estimated to have had these metal-on-metal hip prostheses, there's potential for a lot of damage out there. Is that correct?
There is quite a bit of potential. Now, about 35% of people that have these type of hip replacement, the one we're talking about specifically, there's actually two of them. One is a Johnson & Johnson, DePuy is their orthopedic division. It's called their ASR cup. The other one is a Zimmer design called their Durham cup. And those are the two metal-on-metal ones that we've had a lot of problems with. And about 35% of those people will have elevated metal ions if we check your bloodstream. And we don't know what that means, because some of them don't have any symptoms, but we know that they're elevated. And the current thought is, if it's elevated, it's probably not a good thing, and maybe we need to go back and do something about it. About 15 to 20% of patients will actually have symptoms of either pain, swelling, or horrible things that look like an infection or a tumor, or the hip will actually dislocate. And those patients obviously need something done right away. Normally, we see numbers like this in the realm of 1, 2, 3, 4%, not 15, 20, or 35%. So this is a much higher rate than we would anticipate after hip replacement surgery.
So what do you? What's the plan? I mean, I don't mean just here in Syracuse, but what is the plan in terms of dealing with these problems?
In some centers, they use quite a few of these hips, and these have actually been used worldwide. And a lot of surgeons and recommendations are, if you have one of these, the most important first thing to do is to go back to your surgeon and talk to them about it. Because they'll probably want to check these metal ion levels. And if the metal ion levels are elevated, you need to have a discussion with your doctor whether we should do something now or we should stay and watch it. But a lot of the recommendations are, if your levels are elevated, you probably should have another surgery that involves, and this is a big surgery, unfortunately, but it involves going back into your hip, taking everything out that's in there and putting a new hip replacement in. If you're having a problem with pain, with swelling, it's kind of a no-brainer. You want to have something done. We use these devices in younger patients. we thought that they would allow people to have a much more normal lifestyle. So we used it in our younger patients. And these are patients that, if they're having problems, want to have something done and want to have that corrected.
Makes a lot of sense. And is it, as you said, it's a more involved procedure to have it removed and replaced. But is it, it's not life-threatening necessarily?
Well, there's always complications anytime you have any surgery. And I tell all my patients before surgery, there are major complications from any surgery, whether it's a simple finger surgery or a big hip replacement or a heart surgery or a brain surgery. So yes, there are risks of surgery, things like blood clots and infections and horrible things like that. Is this a life-threatening surgery to go back in and do it again? No, but it is a much more difficult and complicated surgery than the first one. What actually happens with these designs that we make is the bone will grow right into the metal. And that's really nice because we want this to last 15, 20, 25 years with you. However, if we need to take it out, it can be difficult because now your bone is actually grown into the metal replacement. So we have to go in and almost break the bone to get the metal pieces out. Anybody that's done any type of demolition work or remodeling, for instance, of their kitchen, they know what it looks like when they've taken out all their counters and taken out all the flooring in their house. And that's what it looks like when we go in to redo these hips. We have to take all the pieces out and then have to go back and reconstruct it.
And I read somewhere that even after replacement of these devices, in some cases, if there has been some tissue damage due to the metal debris that has accumulated, it remains. It's not like you've taken out the offending piece.
In many cases, that is a problem. You know, the muscles get stretched out, they get inflamed. The recovery is much longer than a normal hip replacement. And in some cases, we don't even know why people are having so many problems. But the thought is that it has to do with all the damage from the problem of the hip replacement.
So just to sum up, if you're a patient who has had a hip replacement, is it important for you to, even if you have no symptoms, to check with your orthopedist to determine what your prosthesis was and so that you at least be aware of what you have inside?
Most patients that I know of locally that have had one of these hip replacement designs have probably received a letter from their surgeon telling them that they had this design and it's important for them to come into the office. However, if you had a hip replacement and you're having a problem, it's of course important to either go see the doctor who did the hip replacement or go see somebody else that can get some x-rays and do a physical exam. If you have a hip replacement that's doing really well and you're worried about it, it's probably a good idea to contact your doctor or even contact the hospital you had the surgery with to find out if you had one of these devices in you. If there's any question at all, you should go back and see the doctor that did this. Most doctors want to see you back at least a year or a couple years out to make sure you're doing well and to get some x-rays and make sure everything looks okay.
But how about if you're new to the concept? Let's say you're at the point, you're 55 years old, you've had some hip pain, you think, you know what, I want to be physically active for the next 30, 40 years, however long I live, and I want to have a hip replacement. What is the hope for them out there now?
Well, there's a lot of great options out there. And there are some metal-on-metal designs that still look like are working well without the problems. Personally, with all these problems associated with the metal-on-metal, I'm not a big fan of metal-on-metal designs. However, some of the other technologies have gotten so much better, they work almost as well. And some of the plastics that we use have, through some complicated process of how they make them, have become very good and very durable and last quite a bit. So they're really good options for young patients out there. Or the ceramic designs do really well as well. So if you are a patient, whether you're 20 or 40 or 60 or 80 and you're having hip problems, you need to have a conversation with your doctor, and that's the most important part. Every doctor is going to talk to you about what they think is best for you. But when it gets to the point of surgery is recommended, you need to have this conversation. What do you use? Why do you use it? And
what's the track record?
What's the track record?
Well, Dr. Robert Sherman, orthopedic surgeon with Upstate Medical University, hey, thanks so much for coming in and helping us understand this very difficult problem. It looks like this could be one of the biggest and most costly medical implant problems since the Medtronic problem with the heart device in 2007. But anyway, I think it's helped us understand what we need to do about it. We have to take a short break. We'll be right back, so stay right there. I'm Linda Cohen. This is HealthLink on Air, FM News Radio 106.9 and 570 WSYR.